Welcome back to another episode of our podcast here at WorkPath. This is where we talk about the major shifts in our business and in the working world. We discuss the outcome economy, but most importantly about what challenges this brings to organizations and how we can address them. Over the last couple of weeks and months, we've been talking a lot about how more outcome-centric ways of leadership and collaboration, how outcome management, how we call it, can help address some of those big challenges and how it can bring major change to how organizations operate. In the first few episodes of this season, we basically pointed out four major problem spaces that we identified from our work with enterprises around the world. So if you missed that episode and if you would like to get a better overview of these four problem spaces, you will also find a link to it in the show notes. So today is about the fourth of these four problem spaces. Because in the previous conversations, we already had discussed the problems and potential solutions around outcome clarity. That was the first topic, which is basically about how much organizations today struggle to explain, to demonstrate to their employees, where are we going? What is our strategy? We looked into some research that indicates that more than two-thirds of employees today don't know their company strategy and how they can contribute. So a lack of clarity about what outcomes are most important for the business's success is a major issue. And that was sort of the starting point of that series. Secondly, we talked about the problem space of organizational alignment, about how difficult alignment in enterprises has always been, but how it sort of like becomes more and more complex because organizations become more complex. And we talked about how organizational alignment can look like if your organization is not a stable org chart or a tree, but it's really a very fluid, a very complex network of teams with much more hybrid structures. So outcome clarity, organizational alignment, and then third problem space, we also talked about daily execution, day-to-day operations, and how difficult it is for businesses today to keep teams, to keep the entire organization focused on the most meaningful outcomes. We are all being busy. We're all creating lots of output. It's a very noisy world somehow, but it's incredibly difficult to stay focused. And what most teams, what most organizations tell us is it is so difficult to stay focused on the most meaningful outcomes that actually have an impact for the customer and that help driving the organization onwards towards a shared strategy. So those three main problem spaces we already addressed. You will find those episodes not just in the show note, but also if you just follow our podcast and look into that. And what's left for today is basically the fourth major problem space that organizations today have to deal with. We will talk about mastering change. How can organizations master all of the change that is going on right now, outside and inside the organization? And to discuss this challenge of mastering organizational change, I invited my colleagues Anna and Philip from WorkPath. Hi there, Anna. Hi, Philip. Why don't we start by you introducing yourself to our audience?
Hello, and thank you, Johannes, for the nice introduction. So my name is Anna, and I'm the team lead of the analytics team at WorkPath for the last almost 3 years. So what we do in our team is to analyze all the strategy data that we have about our customers and give them guidance about how they can improve in their overall process, but also in the strategy execution. So really helping them to master this change that we will talk about it. Today, I will focus mainly on all the quantitative part. So how can we, with numbers, with data, with metrics, improve this change? And my colleague Philip will do the second part. Hello, Philip.
Thanks. Hi, so my name is Philip. I'm responsible for everything around training and enablement within WorkPath. We basically do all the trainings, workshops, coaching, e-learning, community management. Before that time, I was working a lot within the area of agile transformation and organizational development. And that's, I guess, my connection to the topic outcome management, because frameworks like OKR frameworks are obviously called Agile frameworks because they are in accordance with all the major Agile values. So I came across OKRs and outcome management quite a lot in the last years.
Great. It's great to have you guys. So let's get right into it. And before that, just another brief reminder to everyone, follow our podcast on whichever platform you're listening to this, to maybe even leave us a great review. That's always something we're happy about. And by following, you can make sure that you don't miss any future episodes. Okay, Philip. So we're talking about change. We're talking about mastering organizational change. Obviously, it's not a new topic, but why is mastering change so important? Why do we have to talk about this now?
I guess I would say in the past, the size of an organization was very important, so scalability. And we see in the last couple of years that agility and adaptability seem to be way more important for a lot of corporations, for startups, but huge multinational corporations as well. I won't stress the not so old, but seemingly old picture of our VUCA world again. I guess everybody knows it. If you don't, just Google it. But it still explains today's company's business environment quite well. I believe we don't need to quote any specific numbers to credibly state that nearly all of the companies, at least we work with, and I guess you can say that very generically, say their current business model will not remain economically viable for a very long period anymore. That might have been the case a decade ago, but it's definitely not anymore. Nevertheless, let's quote one prominent survey sponsored by PMI and done by The Economist. It states that basically, only 40% of the survey respondents say their companies are good or excellent at feeding back lessons from successful implementation into strategic planning. And just a little bit more than 30% state the same when it comes to unsuccessful ones. I guess that brings it to a very clear point why mastering change is so important today. I guess, Anna, you might have something to add?
Exactly, because this change to agility that Philip is talking about cannot happen overnight. It always requires a structured approach, where you first analyze what is the current status quo of the organization, find out where you need to improve something, and then define these improvement goals that you want to work on. And working on this goal, it's the first step, but even more important is to define how are you going to measure the success. So which metrics do you need to provide already from the beginning that you will be measured over the phases, and at the end, get the results you expect. Only in this way, we can really ensure that we are working over an impactful change. And thankfully, nowadays, we really have all this data. The main problem is just getting the data that we need. So the main problem is starting in the organization, figuring out what are the data you need, how can we measure it, and where do we can get them from. And organizations normally have access to these capabilities, but it's important to not just focus on the typical business KPIs like revenue on sales we are used to. We should think about other capabilities, other data that we can monitor and during the whole phase and the whole transformation process in order to really see if we are evolving in the direction that we want. This will allow leaders and change drivers to gain insights in many open questions that they might have behind this transformation process. And this will not only make the decision-making easier, but also gaining speed in the whole transformation. Our goal should be to answer questions about the process and evolution. Things like, are we ready to expand our transformation efforts in the organization? How should we start? Who should we involve in the process? All these questions should be able to be answered with the help of data.
Okay, got it. So, and we talked about things that have been around for a long time. Philip said it. We talk about the VUCA world, the volatility, the uncertainty. We talk about also the data perspective. And I think you made a good point that all leaders and executives right now are aware that organizational change is becoming sort of like one of the main competitive advantages that an organization can have. Developing capabilities to adapt to change is so much more important than just 10 years ago, just because the frequency and the magnitude of change is increasing. And Philip, you talked a little bit about how in the past it might have been enough to just be big and powerful. But also, I think usually we talk about in this context that size and economies of scales also sort of like make you slower, yeah, and don't just really help you being that fast-moving and adaptive organization that the market environment today demands you to be. And I think there's all kind of indicators that show us that even though we've been talking about the VUCA world and change for such a long time, we talk about agile transformation and agility for really many years, but still it doesn't seem like organizations have significantly upskilled and developed stronger capabilities to change, right? There's this famous research that is quoted a lot that the life expectancy of enterprises is constantly decreasing and that this development is still accelerating. Yeah, I think the life expectancy since the 1980s of major enterprises is decreased by 45 to 50%. So those are all indicators showing that answering change and adapting to change is not necessarily a superpower today's leading enterprises have. Why is managing change, why is mastering change in organizations so hard?
I completely agree with you, Hannes. We even see in the literature that 70% of business transformations fail. And we just talk about how important it is to get the access to this data, but that this is really the foundation to start working with it. But this is only the first start. Thousands of organizations consider themselves data-driven just because they have a ton of data. But the really important thing is to know what to do with the data, to know which data to look at, and to know which decisions should be taken based on the data. It's so simple. Data are really just only records, are really just only numbers. And there are various methods to convert this data into insights, but it needs also a lot of interpretation and it needs also a lot of business know-how in order to convert into real insights that people can use to take decisions. And when it comes to this measuring change, the metrics need to be consistent over all the whole organization. So I have seen already a lot of organizations where you speak with one team and they consider one metric one thing, the next team considers another thing. That's not the same language. We need that every team knows what a KPI means, knows how is it being measured, and knows how they can change it, how they can, with their work, make an impact on it. And to send this message to everyone, so everyone should be involved in the system and everyone should be working on the system. So every employee should be encouraged to work really on the process and to work really on the metrics that are relevant for their work and that they can have an impact on. With these, it's the only way that we really can talk about leading a successful strategy execution. So only if all employees in the organization feel that they know where they're working towards and they know how to impact it. But having said that, I also want to mention that it's really important not just think about, okay, now we need to start to define everything and to decide everything based on metrics. It's very important to maintain this qualitative information that everyone has, experience in their job, experience working with customers. So always we need to have a balance between the quantitative data that we can gather from our business plus the qualitative know-how that we can gather and together with that take the balanced final decision. So be also careful of not just relying on data for everything. It needs to always be balanced.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, right? Showing both perspectives. On the one hand, you're making a point for data-driven transformation, data-driven change. And I think many people in that context talk about evidence-based corporate development. So don't just announce change and then not measure how things are going. You need to like clear goals and indicators if your organizational change initiative is working. But then you also talk about decentralizing change and sort of like empowering teams so they can be part of the change. And I think, yeah, that's a good point to hand over to Philip again, because empowering teams to become better in change and driving change is about, of course, giving them the transparency, giving them the data, the insights needed to, for example, help them understand where are we standing and what's the next step look like for us, how well are we doing right now. But you just said it, Anna, this is always about the people. You cannot just sort of like define the change in a boardroom and then just look at it on an Excel sheet or in our analytics suite, but really it's a people thing, and you need to think about how to empower people to master this.
Exactly. So having worked with a lot of big corporations, scale-up startups, having worked in one big corporation, I feel like I want to stress one point Anna mentioned and you touched base on, Johannes, as well. You touched on the fact that employees should be encouraged to take ownership for change topics. And every time we talk about strategy, it's basically always change. So we want to change something for the better in order to still exist in the future and strive as a business. So outcome management can help with that. But I feel like a lot of, especially big corporations, forget that change can mean stress for the level of an organization which actually creates the value. So the execution level, the operational level, so to say, everybody who does the actual work, if we're being honest. So I would like to maybe pick apart what we see on a daily basis within our customers' organizations. Definitely not all of them, but to be honest, more than enough for a company like ours to exist and help big corporations becoming more outcome focused and by this mastering change even better. So starting maybe at the top, C-level and maybe process owners usually don't have enough data, or even if they have the data, not enough insight on the progress of their transformational efforts. Then the mid-level management and team leads are usually the ones expected to drive any transformation, any change topics, but they are usually not enabled enough for it. So it's change is often tackled as just the next topic we want to do. But we need to remember change is very important. Change takes time and change takes skills. So enablement of exactly all the people involved is very crucial. And then last but not least, teams are usually overwhelmed by the speed of change. And even more important, they have a lot of conflicting priorities within these change topics. And on top of all of this, for example, most scaled agile frameworks a lot of our customers use stop at some point of hierarchy. So looking at an old school corporation, you usually have still have hierarchy, but those scaled frameworks stop at some level, meaning teams might have access to a new way of working, but the top management, in some cases, still keeps on going like before. Obviously, not an ideal situation we need to facilitate.
Lots of good points you're sharing here, why organizational change and mastering change is such a big hassle, not just from a systemic point of view, not just from a data point of view, but also really just from a people and change management point of view. If managing strategy execution, if managing change, as you said, like any kind of strategy and strategy implementation is about change in the end, if that is such a big challenge and if the speed and the magnitude of change just increases, what can solutions look like? What exactly does it mean when you say, Anna, I think you said leaders need to work more on the system, not just in the system somehow. What does that mean? How can solutions to these problems that we're describing here can look like?
Maybe let me jump in. You mentioned that the speed and magnitude of change increases. When that happens, I feel like the impact of a long-term strategy might at the same time decrease. We still need a long-term strategy, but the relevance of permanent strategic thinking everywhere in the organization grows a lot. And at the same time, I feel like leaders need to empower their teams to think and act more strategically on a daily basis, with more autonomy and more decentralized. What we see quite a lot when working with our customers, one enabler for this is access to data. So the possibility for each team, everybody involved in a change, to define their own leading indicators. Another might be actual mandates to take necessary decisions. So decentralization only works if everybody involved can actually take decisions. Otherwise, the organization just gets too slow. And that's what I believe a lot of people working in huge corporations see on a daily basis again. Furthermore, as you said, Johannes, leaders need to work less in the system. For example, breaking down goals and executing or delegating the execution of those goals. They need to focus more on providing a system, basically an operating model that always adapts to the current market needs and the individual environment. So basically, it says make strategy consumable in shorter cycles using outcomes, leveraging, for example, frameworks like the OKR framework. Outcome management is built on uncertainties, right? So work in short cycles with transparency as a means to an end for swarm intelligence. Organizational units, usually that's what we find, usually want to draft objectives and key results. They want to commit to leading indicators in there, but they need to have the freedom to work in a system of hypotheses, at least regarding what activities they need to do in order to actually get where they want or need to go. So you could use all the data Anna mentioned a couple of times already to explain why a change is necessary. What baseline do we have? And communicate the strategic direction via, for example, an organizational OKR, and by this, making a strategy consumable for everybody. But, and I feel like that's very important, do all that without falling in the so to say, old micromanagement trap. So leave room to use the intelligence of the many.
I completely agree, and I also think that we can solve this problem again with data. So, as we said, this reorganization and adaptations, the frequency is increasing and we need them constantly. The teams shouldn't even wait that their management tells them what to do, where are the areas where they need to work on. It should already be enabled, as Philip was saying, in order to, on their own, decide where adaptation and change is needed. Because if we always need to wait that the management goes to the teams and tells them what to do, we will slow down the whole organizations for months, and this will not be together with the market. So the market will evolve faster than the organizations can do. So as we said, instead, in order to also avoid this micromanagement, we can give the teams the ability to prioritize the strategic outcomes for themselves. And to adopt this entrepreneurial mindset, to be really aligned with the whole organization and to adapt, we can do this data-driven approach. So each team will identify the areas of improvement autonomously and we'll be able to measure the impact without any need of any management. That, what does it mean also this such data-driven approach? It means that it will be completely incredibly transparent for everyone in the organization. So leaders will not be afraid of needing this micromanagement because everyone in the organization will see how teams are evolving. Everyone will be part of this change. So everyone will be also entrepreneurially involved in it and being able to make the best out of it and get the best results. And it has all these fast benefits, so fast and adaptive change, while it also allows the leaders to still monitor how it's evolving and adjust the operating model. So again, here, they should be working on the system and not directly in the system. And ultimately, what is also important is that this decentralized approach, as Johannes was mentioned before, provides a really continuous flow of smaller changes, constantly evolving, which fit to the market, which fits to the concurrency, so that you can always be up to date and you can always be in such a speed that will allow everyone in the organization to be very motivated and be able to work on the same impactful outcomes at the end. And this is really the key for long organizational life expectancies in the future.
Understood. You shared a couple of like high level concepts and like general ways of looking at this. You again made a point for insights and the necessity of a data driven approach to that. Maybe can we make it somehow a bit more tangible? Do you have any examples of what it means to use data from those planning and collaboration process, use data out of the organization and sort of then build your decision making on that in order to drive organizational change or to start a new change initiative?
Definitely. I think that could help also to understand better what we mean with data-driven. There are tons of examples we could already give after having worked with this type of data for the last few years. But I would point out the most important one for me because we had the biggest business impact on the organization, which is about measuring the collaboration between the teams. So we at WorkPath can measure how individuals and teams collaborate between each other. That means we can see if, for example, one specific team is working in the priorities or in the strategies of another team. This, if you measure it for a specific period of time, you can see kind of clusters. So you will see that there are some teams that always work together. With this information, we went back to the customer, show it to them, and show them that how these value streams were hidden in the organization and were being built on their own because teams started working more autonomously together. And with that, we improved or we changed the completely structure and hierarchy of the organization. So we helped the organization really to step the first steps towards a value stream organization. And now they see already that the problems with dependencies that they had before have decreased a lot thanks to the change that we saw in the data. So this is one example, but we have a lot also regarding alignments or regarding, for example, strategies that don't get the support that is needed. And based on that, directly before this execution of the strategy start, we could already see that it's not going to be achieved. And this type of information is all that we can measure at WorkPath in order to make the strategy execution process of the organization better.
Yeah, that is a great example that you shared here. If I'm looking at many of our customers, they have sometimes 2-3 major reorganizations where they restructure their business or their teams and departments. And I think every time this leads to like a lot of friction, lots of teams waiting for what's next, and basically the business not creating value, not moving onwards in this transition time. I think it won't be able to go on like that, right? In a way, what you're saying there is if you have a more data-driven approach to corporate development and how you manage organizational change, you don't need those big reorganizations anymore. So I think this was a really good and tangible example. Just look at who needs whom, look at dependencies between teams and analyze value streams from the strategic planning and collaboration process, and then make more continuous and smaller changes on an ongoing basis. I think that is a really good example. In general, I think we had a couple of key learnings and concepts that you shared. For me, it always starts with this awareness for change. I think organizations need to make everyone aware that change is not just happening all the time, but is also affects everyone. It's everyone's responsibility and it takes certain skills. So also everyone needs to be empowered to drive and to co-define and own that kind of constant change. So I think a common theme, a golden thread that I hear today, it's again about empowering teams, managing successful organizational change today more than ever, given the speed, given the complexity, will only work with empowered teams who understand the change, who can initiate change and then own the change throughout to the end and then through the next change by decentralizing this process and by really putting it into the teams. So it starts with awareness, it starts with upskilling, and then it has a lot to do with transparency and better communication. I also liked talking about like working in the system versus working on the system. So management sort of on the flip side of this also has to sort of like let go or give teams more autonomy, which doesn't mean they are less responsible or they have less levers, that their toolbox is limited. I think it's quite the opposite. But the way of working on change changes. Yeah. So you are responsible for the infrastructure in which your teams operate, and you need to monitor this, you need to understand it, and you need to constantly adjust and optimize this infrastructure. So I think that's sort of like an awareness, a mindset change that is necessary. That's a great point you're making there. And then ultimately, very tangible, what Philip talked about, making strategy and strategy execution more accessible, somehow making it, I think I really like how many of our customers call it strategy activation, and making this a more inclusive, a more engaging process where teams, on the one hand, it becomes more consumable. What is our strategy? Where do we want to go? It's sort of like ironic, I think, how much companies invest into really, really good shareholder communication. There are big teams working on the annual and the quarterly reports. And then you look at how little investment there is going into really good employee communication and into making it actually actionable and making it accessible to those people who in the end, as Philip said, really have to create the value, really have to execute the strategy. So making this more accessible, key thing of like new approaches to breaking down strategy and also allowing more bottom-up goal setting, more bottom-up and more decentralized prioritization in the teams. Again, comes back to the beginning of what we said. This means upskilling. It means strengthening entrepreneurial skills. A team that doesn't understand who is our customer, what's the exact value we need to drive, what are the metrics that I have available to measure my success, to measure if I'm actually creating value. A team like this cannot really be an autonomous team or a team that owns change and drives change on strategy the way organizations today need it. So, and last but not least, of course, we talk about empowering teams with data and insights on all levels, yeah, with regards to the strategy, but also with regards to the organizational system around it on team level, on department level, but also on a global scale, on an organizational level. So I asked this one question for an example, maybe to close this episode. Do we have more tips, best practices, tangible things? So how can organizations get started, or what's a good way of implementing some of the concept we learned about today, Philip?
Let me try to sum it up in one, two, three, maybe three tips. So the major point or the major part of a solution is outcome management. Basically, we see an ever-increasing number of small, medium-sized, and huge corporations using outcome management as an operating model for the whole business. So tip number one would be to leverage frameworks like OKR to bring the principles of outcome management to reality within a whole organization. In this, I feel like we need to be aware that implementing outcome orientation is a change, and a change needs to be treated as such. To quote a survey in The Economist again, I believe I mentioned it at the beginning, the leading barrier to successful implementation is a lack of change management skills. I believe that's stated by nearly 50%, a little bit less than 50% of the participants in this survey. That brings me to, I guess, another tip. So number two would be explicitly and continuously making strategies transparent. That's something which can happen through internal employee communication like you managed, Johannes. But I would even go one step further. Just communicating a strategy or a need for change isn't enough. You need to make it consumable for everybody. And that's where frameworks like OKR can help. Because looking at the strategy papers, I know from a lot of companies, it's not as if they were written in a way that every employee actually can say how they contribute to it. And that's the part consumable. And maybe one more, last but not least, it's about having a long-term vision, but still focus on actually executing your strategic pillars in shorter cycles. So not anymore in a strategic cycle of, let's say, 3 to 5 to 7 years, but in shorter cycles of 3 to 12 months. So focus on execution, I would say. That would be three tips. I guess I could go on, but Anna, what would be yours?
Yeah, I also have some tips. First of all, the most important one, really start simple. So it's all about trying and error. So give the autonomy to the teams to decide what are the 2-3 most important metrics and start tracking it and start collecting data. After a period of time, if you cannot answer any strategic question with this data, is the wrong data. Take it away and look for new measures. This data should give you enough information so that you can take a decision out of it. Second, and also important one, once you have defined the 2-3 metrics, convert this main KPIs into the everyday tool of the whole organization. So every team, every business unit, even every individual in the long term should have their main KPIs they work towards. That means every work they do every day should in somehow be connected to this KPI, so it should somehow affect at the end of the day this measure and this metric that it's the most important one. And my third tip would be that KPIs is not all. So KPIs normally are lag indicators. They are very relevant and important because they measure at the end of a period of time how we are doing and how we are evolving. But even more important are leading indicators. These are these metrics that you can measure during a shorter period of time and where you as an individual or as a team have a direct impact on them. So you can do tasks, do work behind it that will enable and will improve them. So it's kind of a combination of this leading and lagging indicators is the right approach. So always having both type of metrics would help you to be successful at the end and have an impact on your whole organization.
Great. Starting simple, focus on execution, focus on making your strategy, but also your change plan actionable, and then go in baby steps and make it a very iterative process. Those are great points to wrap it up. We're already coming to an end, so thank you very much, Anna. Thank you, Philip, for being here today with us. Like always, there is much more. We try to get it into a short conversation, so there's much more background information, much more links, a couple of surveys and research papers we quoted, so you will find all this content in our show notes. And if you want to join our WorkPath community to find more content like this, but also to just suggest topics, maybe suggest guests for our podcast, we always appreciate your input. So maybe you just take a look at community.workpath.com, or you just follow us on LinkedIn or Twitter on any of the major platforms and engage with us there. There you will also get updates on our webinars, on events like the quarterly, for example, and we will make sure that not just about mastering change, mastering organizational change, our topic of today, but also in the context of the three other problem spaces we're talking here, you'll get more insights and you'll also hear more from our customers, more from the companies we work with to really have this today just a starting point in that particular problem space. So again, thanks for your time. Thanks to our listeners and thank you to Anna and Philip. And we hope to see you soon again.